All right, guys, it's 7 a.m. meeting. My name's Kurt, and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday Night Blue Chip Speakers Meeting at the NABA Club. We are a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with a year more sobriety, tells his or her story.
Okay. Hi, my name's Sarah. I'm an alcoholic. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual in our personal stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight, and listening later on aabluechipspeakers.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker. And we believe that it's only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too, I must have this thing. So tonight's speaker is my dear friend Barbara B., and she's a really important part of my life, and I'm excited to hear her story.
Thanks, Laura. Hey, y'all, I'm Barbara Begner, B., and I'm an alcoholic. I had to kind of chuckle when it said, you know, I hope nobody would be offended, however that was worded, by being too offensive. And I will try not to be offensive, but I will tell you, I'm having a hot flash right now. So if I am revealing, and of course it's just comes at the right time, you know. So I my sobriety date is July 15th of 2010. So I just picked up an 8-year chip in just a handful of weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, you know, and that's like a miracle to this program. It's absolutely amazing. I welcome somebody who this is their first meeting. I remember, like, I got kind of choked up when you raised your hand, honestly, because I remember that feeling, and I felt so desperate, and I'll get to that a little bit later, and felt so raw and unprepared to face life without alcohol. You know, I didn't know how I was going to be able to do that. I didn't say I have a sponsor, and I do sponsor women. That has to, you know, be the caveat of what we say here. And I'm just going to share my experience, you know, of what it was like. I 8 years, and I'm in my 60s. You know, it took me a long time to find the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it took me a long time to figure out what was wrong with me was that I was an alcoholic. I don't have these great stories. You know, mine was this long, slow dip of into, like, the depths of despair, you know. And it wasn't like I had, from the outside, things kind of looked okay for me, you know. And in a way, it's a lot harder to find know that you're an alcoholic when it's that way. It just seems like it's easier, I think. Well, I don't know if it's easier if you get locked up and you have DUIs and all that. I think we find our path whatever way we find our path, you know. And mine was just a long, slow descent into alcoholism. And, you know, I started drinking. I was thinking, I was beyond wallflower when I was a kid. I was just so full of fear. I mean, I was just kind of came out of the womb that way. And wasn't any fault of my parents or anything. It was just kind of the way I was wired. And so to stand here and be able to do this today is just like just the miracle of the program. Because before Alcoholics Anonymous, there is no way I'd get up up to a podium and speak to people. You know, I mean, my life has changed tremendously since I entered the program. I almost look at it as like before AA and after AA, and there was a lot of before AA. And I will try not to spend too much time on that. But, you know, as a kid, I was just full of fear. I don't know how to do relationships. I don't know how to relate to people. You know, I just want to kind of hide. And so when I'm 13 and discover alcohol, it was like, wow, man, this kind of helps me fit in just a little bit. You know, it wasn't an oh wow factor. Well, actually, maybe it was. You know, I know that I had a voice in my head as soon as I drank that said, I think this is just the way you're going to have to face life. In hindsight, I believe that's what it did for me. You know, I partied. I mean, 13, I'm in like middle, junior high, it was called then, you know, and I remember drinking Pabst or Falstaff. It was not the highest of the beers, you know, back then. And then when there was like the Boone's Farm phase and, you know, Apple. And then we thought we were like really cool with Liebfraumilch Blue Nun. Like that was like really like in back then. But you know, I remember drinking that and kind of fitting in, you know. So there was a lot of drugs back then. That was in the 60s. And so I did whatever I could, really, when you're 13, 14, 15. And my parents, they were checked out. Like they were loving parents. I was the youngest. They were looking at retirement. They were like, well, as long as she makes it through and doesn't die, you know, I think it'll be okay. I think they just had blinders on. And but they saw signs. It wasn't normal back then. Even my drinking back then, the drug use was not normal. But man, I did it for another 40 some years. But it goes through phases, which is even more baffling, because I'm like, you know, it should just be you're an alcoholic and it looks this way. And mine wasn't that way, because I actually had some times where I did not drink. And I just knew I loved it, and it I was gonna be a party girl, and that's how I was just kind of wanted to find myself. Let me just be a party girl for my whole life, because then I can kind of fit in and it's okay, you know. So go through middle school, junior high school, and then high school. God, we were just like wild kids, you know. I mean, I went to an all-girls Catholic school, and you would think that it was like, you know, pretty like tame. Oh my God, they would like lock us in because we were so wild. Like they'd chain up the doors because we would go out and smoke pot and cigarettes and leave school in the middle of the day. And we were just like this one little wild class of these poor nuns. I mean, they were just like, what are we going to do with these women or girls, you know? And we call the fire department when they lock us in and say, they're not allowed to chain us in. And they were little defiant little Catholic girls, you know. But I remember friends then, they knew like how to go to the boy dances. Like I can't do that stuff. I don't know how to do that stuff. I never experienced a prom. I don't know how to date. I don't know. And in fact, I'm still working on that part of it. But even though I've been married and had children and all that, but it was, we'll get to that too later. But, you know, so we did so many crazy things in high school, and then college comes. And I, my first year was just like, I was not ready for college. I'm 17. I go off to the biggest party school, and I never went to class. I came, home, was that the year I hitchhiked? Yeah, I hitchhiked from, like one night in February, with a friend. I said, I think we should like hitchhike to Arizona. I live in Michigan, and it's February. And we're like, that's a great idea. And I'll be damned, we did it. Like we just walked out and got the expressway and hitchhiked all the way to Phoenix and back in a period of just like a week. It was absolutely insane, you know, but that's kind of where I was at in that period. I looked probably worse than when I finally 40 some years later show up in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, but then that looks like normal. That's normal college behavior there, you know. That's just what you do. And but I like just way too many drugs, and I flunked out of school and came home and slept for about 2 months at my parents' house, and kind of had one of those periods where I got my act together. It was, you know, I went to community college, and I worked full time in the evenings. I went to school during the day, and I still partied, but it wasn't like it didn't have its hooks in me, you know. So I could manage, and I've learned how to work through hangovers from my whole life, and I'd show up to work, and I continued to show up to work through my whole drinking career, really. So then I went to another 4 years. So it took me 7 years to get my first degree, and you know, went and kind of got it together, and you know, and then I moved to Atlanta, and there was some partying in Atlanta in 79. Got an old friend back there that remembers those days, and now we're both in the rooms, you know. So it was pretty crazy. Atlanta in 79, and it was just one big party and one night stands, and that I don't know. I can't do relationships. I don't know how to do that, you know. So it's bars and get drunk and take somebody home. And you know, it's, I remember when we read that Jekyll and Hyde thing in the book, and it talks about, you know, he's seldom he's mostly insanely drunk, and it's Jekyll and Hyde. And I remember when I first read that, I said, no, that wasn't me, you know. I'm not Jekyll and Hyde. Like my personality didn't change that much. And as I've gotten sober, I realized that, yeah, like when I'm not drinking, I don't go pick up strangers, you know. Like I don't do that kind of stuff. That's a personality change. I don't, you know, I would drive with my kids, you know, in the car drunk. That's kind of Jekyll and Hyde-ish. You know, I wasn't one of those that, like, my personality would always change to be mean. I had friends that did that, and I pegged them as alcoholics. I'm like, oh my God, you are an alcoholic. Your personality changes. And a friend of mine that I've known for 50 years, she's not one of us. She can moderately drink now. She can have a drink, like one drink, you know. And I remember when she was going through that phase, I would sit there and watch her have that one drink and go, How does she do that? Like I don't know how to do that, you know. But I have no clue that that's alcoholism. She's just got stronger will than me, or she's turning into a dud, you know. I remember people would say, "Oh, I haven't had a drink in 20 years." I'm like, "God, you're a loser. Like, what's wrong with you? You know, like who doesn't drink? You know, I mean, it had to be on the table. You know, I mean, I'd go to restaurants and." If they didn't have alcohol, I would storm out. Like, how dare they not have alcohol? I remember one time with my husband, and I'm like, you know, it's 5 o'clock, and I have to have my alcohol. You know, like we left the restaurant and went and found one. It's like, calm down, woman. You know, it's like, whew, yeah, it's just. But you know, I don't know. That's alcoholism. I don't know. That's restless, irritable, and discontent without a drink. You know, I mean, 5 o'clock. I'm a 5 o'clock drinker. 5 o'clock, like watching the clock as the second hands get closer, I am like there, because that was a normal time to drink. You know, that's when my parents had their cocktails. You know, they would drink one or two. Well, two. I think there were two cocktail drinkers. You know, back in the 50s and all that. And so I held on to that for a long time. Forever, actually, until I came in here. I was like slipping into closer to 3 o'clock by the time I hit the rooms. But you know, it was still like I'm a 5 o'clock drinker, and even to the very end, I probably had 50 shot glasses. That's what I like collected. I love shot glasses. In fact, I just threw them out the other day, which is kind of funny. But I was still at the end of my drinking, I am still measuring my shots, you know, and I'm not counting them, but I'm like pouring them in, you know. It's like, but I'm using a shot glass. Like, it's just insane how you think, you know. So I end up in Atlanta. It's kind of crazy party time, and there was a handful of little things that happened. This is in 79, and I probably looked like I look like an alcoholic back then, you know. But I hung out with everybody else that did this. They look exactly like me. I mean, we're really good at that, finding people that drink just like us, you know. And I had some friends that I'd drink with on, you know, Friday nights, and I had friends that I drank with on Saturday nights, and I, you know, like every night of the week I'd have a different little group. And I remember one time my friend said, "Oh, I only drink like this when I'm with you, like on Saturday nights." And I'm like, flat out, you are lying to me. There is no way that you just drink like this with me. Like, I didn't know that was possible. Like, I, you know, because I did it every night as much as I could anyway, you know. So I come to Atlanta in 79, and I did get a degree in horticulture. That was my first degree. I was working in greenhouses. It doesn't take a whole lot of effort. You know, planting little plants, and I'm doing my thing. And it's in 83, my other plants, and doing a lot. Oh my God, yeah, that too. But I ended up at the very end being a daily pot smoker, and so when I got sober, I threw everything away. I dabbled. You know, it's so insane. Like, I tried to fit in. I wanted to fit in so much that I would smoke pot, and I was one of those that like got paranoid, and I'd still do it anyway, and then I'd be like a little wallflower, and then I'd have to drink more to like loosen up so that I could be part of the crowd. It was like this vicious cycle of like trying to fit in, and it's just insane, and I don't know that it's insanity, really, you know. So 83 comes around, and I am at the bars every night. I'm absolutely driving drunk all the time. I'm slutty. I'm like, it's just not pretty. And my sister was dying of cancer, and I had a sexual assault, and my sister was so worried about me, and she says, "You've got to stay out of the bars." And I'm like, "You're right, you know, I probably do." Not, she didn't say I had to stop drinking. She said, "You need to stay out of the bars." Those are two totally different things to me. So right at that time, I met somebody. He was pursuing me, and he did not drink. And I thought, this is perfect. Like, he's my designated driver. He doesn't drink. We won't get into knockdown, drag-out fights, because that was, like, part of what would happen. You know, I get in, you know, abusive relationship. And, you know, because there's alcohol, and it fuels it, and it's just not pretty. And so he, like, he pursued me. We got married. And so he was, like, my designated driver for about 20 years. And he was okay with me drinking, because I was easier to get along with him, you know, when I drank. And so get married and I get pregnant. So it was amazing that I actually did not drink for 9 months. Like, I didn't have a drink for 9 months. I think, I quit smoking that then, too. You know, it was like, I was felt so sick. I remember that last cigarette and just like, oh, God, it was so sick. Did not smoke for 20-some years. And then about 2 years before I got sober, man, I picked it back up. And I was, like, just like a drink. When if you relapse, you know, it's like I was a chain smoker. I was hooked. It was just, it had its claws in me. So I didn't drink, and then I realized I couldn't. I was working with my husband at the time, and I thought, God, I'll kill him if we continue to work together. And I mean, like, literally, like, I this is recorded. you know, that vision, I just can't even erase it out of my head. So we had another child. I thought I would fix what was wrong with the marriage and me and all that, you know. So I went through a couple pregnancies without drinking. And during this time, I went to nursing school. That was it. I was either going to kill him or go to nursing school. And I chose nursing school. So because there was just too much togetherness. And that's insane. Like, I can't even, the insane thinking is just like, that's so crazy to look back on that and go, God, those are like real thoughts in your head, you know, and it seems so normal at the time when we talk about in the book, like, differentiate the true from the false and all that. It's absolute madness, some of the things that we think about and are considering doing to other people, you know. So I go to nursing school and I get my degree and I hadn't been drinking during that time and I, you know, things are okay. I can't say I was happy. I had two young kids and I wasn't super happy, but I showed up at work and I loved being a nurse. And I remember at some point about when my son was probably, my youngest was probably about two, because he was born when I was in nursing school. I remember sitting at the nurse's station going, God, when did these hangovers start again? You know, like it crept up on me. It was like having that glass of wine, a couple glasses of wine down to the below the halfway mark in the bottle, and then you have to finish it because you can't put a bottle back in the refrigerator that it's got more than halfway. It just doesn't work that way, you know. So then I would just, during my everyday drinking, just as I'm making dinner, I would just drink a bottle of wine, and then I'd go and party with those friends that only partied on the weekends, like, you know, that I didn't believe. And over time, it just got worse, you know. And I just learned how to work through the hangovers. I mean, I never thought about not drinking. The thought of not having alcohol is not ever on the table for me, and it was not until the very end. I was never one that said I'm gonna try to quit drinking. I thought I could stop it too, and I just couldn't do it, and I couldn't do it for years. And so I just kind of plowed through the hangovers. And so we're in the 70s, the 80s, the 90s. Now we're in 2000s and I'm miserable, and it's get my husband is starting to talk about retiring together, and I'm like, oh my God, I can't do that. You know, like, I know I can't do that. I'm going to have to get divorced. And so better than the alternative, you know. And so, you know, so we got divorced, and I thought, oh my God, life's going to be great. You know, like, he's been my problem all along. And so we get divorced, he moves out, and then there's me, you know, and what do I know how to do? I know how to drink. And so I start going back to the bars, but now I've lost my designated driver, so I'm driving drunk out to Marietta to some dance places there, you know, I'm hiding it more. I'm drinking before I go out. I'm having like three drinks before I go out so I can then meet my friends at the bar. And then I look normal to have two or three there, and then I go home and I finish until I black out or pass out. And I didn't even start blacking out until my last 2 years of drinking. You know, I could feel it, man. It was just, something was revving up, and I didn't know what it was. And I'm smoking cigarettes, and I'm drinking, and I remember, like, going, God, I don't even want this thing. And I had so many times where I'm like just pouring it down, some plug in my nose, just taking it, going, God, you don't even want it. But you know, the arm had a whole different idea. You know, it was like it was going in my body no matter what. If I was sick, I would make a hot toddy. You know, I mean, I was going to drink every day no matter what. I did not miss a day. if possible. I was very organized with my drinking, as far as I rarely ran out. I mean, I'd buy the big handles of gin is what I ended up with, because, you know, the wine wasn't working because I couldn't stop with wine, so I switched and I went to vodka. Well, the vodka did the same thing. I didn't have a shut-off valve with that either. So then I switched to gin, and I thought, well, screw it. I'll just, like, stay with gin, you know. And it was Bombay, and it was kind of classy. It was in that sapphire, the blue bottle. It was real pretty. And I'm living alone, and I remember I'd wake up in the mornings, and I'd go, damn, who got into my alcohol last night? Like, who got into my house? Like, I really thought, like, somebody came in, found the cupboard, drank my alcohol, and then I'd go, well, I guess I would kind of believe it was me, but a lot would be gone, and it just didn't seem like I could be drinking that much, you know. And so a couple years of just, it's spiraling out of control, and I'm still working, and I'm living alone, and I am blacking out, and I'm bouncing off my walls every night, and I had divine intervention, and that's the only way that I can explain it. Couple things. One is, like, you are powerless over this. I do not know anything about AA. I don't know as the first step. I just know that that thought came into my head. And the other one that came in very clearly was, if you don't do something about your drinking, you're going to kill yourself or somebody else. And I remember hearing that really loud, too. And I thought, yeah, I'm like, I had a swimming pool. I would go in late at night, totally drunk, and I thought I could die that way. I could die. I never drew out the whole, like, dying of alcoholism. Mine was going to be like an accident, probably. I'm driving in blackouts. And I rationalize that, and I'm telling my kids, you know, you've got designated driver, right? Like, you got to have a designated driver, and then I'm doing just the opposite. I was telling myself I'm a good driver because I felt like I was a good driver, and blackout, you know, like, I never hit anything. I never got pulled over. I don't know how that happened. I really don't. And so I had these little thoughts, you know, and then, you know, it's funny because you never know what your bottom is going to be or when the time to come into AA is going to be. And for me, it was those little thoughts that I knew something was wrong with me. But the thought of not having alcohol in my life it's just way too frightening. I cannot imagine what that's going to look like. It's like life will be over. I will be miserable. This is the only thing I know. I've been doing it for 43 years on just about a daily basis. And I just don't know if I can face life without it. I had been having suicidal thoughts. It was just like I had gone to this depth of despair and depression and people, and I'm hiding it, you know, like I'm hiding it. A friend came over one Wednesday evening, and I was slurry drunk like I am every Wednesday evening, and she just happened to catch me in it, and I felt like, oh my God, I just got busted, you know. And I remember a therapist telling me, like, someday we have to talk about your drinking, and I said, you know, like, that really frightened me, because what that means is I'm going to have to cut back or stop, and I don't want to do that. I just, it's not an option for me. So I listened to those voices, and something made me go into work and Google AA. Like, I don't know anything about AA. I know AA is a cult. It's a cult, you know, and it's got 12 steps. And but, you know, you get to that point of desperation, and I'm like, I think I'll check out the cult. I'll go in there, and I'll get a reprieve for a little bit maybe, and then I'll do, you know, who knows what the rest of my life will look like. I can't see that far. I just know that I am at that point where I just cannot, the thought of having another drink was absolutely exhausting for me. And I reached that balance, and thank God, God was with me at that time. I did not know it, you know. And so I pick up the phone, and I've been carrying the number around for a few days. After I Googled AA, and I'm like looking at it, and then somebody would walk by at work, and I'd shut the computer down, and then I'd be like looking at it again. And on the bottom, I don't know if you've ever gone to that website, but there's this little thing down the bottom that says Big Book, and you click it, and I'm like, I don't know what this is. But I clicked it, and I opened it up, and I started reading in little bits and pieces, and I actually saw myself in those pages. I mean, I was given the gift to see myself in those pages where I went, oh, my God, I think like that, and I drink like that. And I'm just talking about the first, like, three chapters. You know, I didn't get into it in depth, but I remember identifying. And I thought, okay, There was something about, you know, call. There was a number for the central office, and I called them, and they're so kind. You know, if you can ever help somebody, I've never done that. Maybe one day I will in my service, is be there for the person on the other end of the line, because it's a scary, scary place to be. You know, none of us come in here, like, all confident and like, yeah, this is just going to be great. You know, we are just the opposite of that. And to have somebody kind on the other end of the phone that says, you know, because I'm in tears and I'm like, I think I have a problem with alcohol. And they're like, well, there's a meeting. And I'm like, I don't know what meetings are. I don't know what any of this stuff is. And I, of course, like so many of us go, like a meeting tonight? Like, no. I was surely making too much of this, you know. And I had already, it was already after 5 o'clock by the time I called. So I'd already had started in my cocktails, you know. So, but what I did do the next morning, I guess by the grace of God, is I woke up and I poured all my alcohol out. Like, I don't know where that came from, you know, but I was so done. I threw the pot away, I threw the alcohol away, and I went to my first meeting that night, and I had no idea what to expect. I left my cigarettes at home. That's how little I knew about AA. It's like, I left my cigarettes at home because I didn't want people judging me for smoking, you know. Now, that doesn't tell you you're clueless about AA. I don't know what does. I show up at what is now my home group, the Fifth Tradition group. And, you know, you never know when you reach your hand out to a newcomer. Like, you could be saving a life. Our hands are lifelines to people coming in. And I didn't know it at the time, but I was met in the parking lot by one of our home group members that is just very active in service, and he welcomed me. And he must have sensed that I was clueless. He's like, where do you go to meetings? And I'm like, I don't. And he's like, oh my God, is this your first AA meeting ever? And I said, yeah. And he gathered the women around. Some are here in this room tonight, and so I met my sponsor. And you know, the beauty of that first meeting was what hooked me. You know, and I can't explain it. It just sounds so like kind of corny because it's not everybody's experience. But it was absolutely God in my life saying, "There's a way out." You know, and here it is. And there's these women that are here, and they are saying, We want you to stay. And they, you know, and I know we hear they were happy and all that. And there was something so special about this first meeting that, you know, I heard what they were saying. And they said, you know, go pick up a white chip. And I'm like, what is that? And they go, it doesn't matter. Just go do it. And I was desperate and my ears were open. I mean, we get to that point where it's just like, I'll do anything to get away from this life that I've been living. And so they, I think it was Roundup weekend actually, or one weekend, and they said, we're going to be gone, but make sure you hit a meeting every day and then come back and we'll all be here for you. And I did. I mean, I actually did it. Like, it's amazing because I don't know this stuff, you know, but I was being guided. So I went to my second meeting and nobody said hello to me. And I thought, thank God that was not my first meeting, you know, and I realized how important it is to greet somebody who you've never seen or that looks uncomfortable. It is so powerful. It doesn't mean they're going to hear it or reach their hands back out, but we got to do that work because that's how I got in and that's why I stayed. And so, you know, I went to a few meetings and then I did what they said about, I got the courage to ask my sponsor. The first night she sold me my first big book and she said, I'll be your sponsor. I'm like, don't even know what that is. I don't know anything about how this works. My head is really mushy. I've been drinking for a lot of years. I'm reading an elementary school book and you guys are reading PhD material. You know, I mean, I don't get it, but I'm showing up and that's all I'm doing. And I'm hitting a meeting every day and I'm forcing myself to get up. Like they'll say, can you read? And I go, well, I don't know. I have to. They go, yeah, you have to. And I go, okay, I'll do it. You know, and I'd be up there and I'd be shaking and, but when you're desperate, you'll do whatever it takes, you know. And so I just dove in and I never looked back. And I I worked the steps with my sponsor. I was so ready for relief. I was so tired of feeling, just having all this baggage for all this year, all these years. And the fear part was the biggest. You know, we got to inventory. You know, I thought I had a relationship with God when I came in, you know, because I said, oh, yeah, there is God. And so therefore there was relationship. And what I've come to realize in through my 8 years that I am just beginning my relationship with the higher power. I learned through doing the steps. You know, that's how I developed this relationship, and that I can only keep learning it. You know, I shared at a meeting the other day, there's a part in the book in the agnostics that says God is either everything or he is nothing. What's your choice to be? And it was almost 8 years into the program before I really kind of got that. You know, I mean, this is a journey. This is like something that doesn't come right away. And I think when we first come in, it's just like, oh yeah, I want to like get with God and do the steps and move on and be good. And it's just not the way, that's not my experience. You know, I have to do this stuff every day. So I got my sponsor and I went and did the inventories, and fear inventory was huge. And that's the one where I really started getting some relief, you know, because I didn't realize that how much fear I was in. I didn't realize that every morning I'm looking at where there's people in the bushes and they're going to get me. Like, and I did that for years, and I would like peek around and be like, they were following me and they were behind the trees, and they were like constant fear, like always like that. Damn, is that exhausting. Once you get away from it, it's like, how did I, whew, no wonder I was having heart palpitations. I ended up in the ER with heart palpitations, you know. And you know, it didn't help that the alcohol either, you know, and probably the doctor is saying to me, there's something wrong with your lab values. Do you drink a lot? You know, I'm like, no, two a day. You know, that's a magic number. I have two, and they now are smart enough to multiply that at least by three, I'm sure, if not five, because that's about where I was at that time. But, you know, so I started getting some relief, and that raw feeling that I had, that like that when you're in and you're new and there's no relief and there's no steps working yet, and you're just like, oh God, it's just like so hard. But you keep showing up, and you get that little bit of relief coming to a meeting and working the steps, and slowly, you know, I learned how to pray in these rooms. I mean, I was raised Catholic, and you would think of all religions, like, well, maybe there's more. They all pray. But, I mean, we pray. I prayed my grandpa out of heaven, and I prayed. I mean, we did all sorts of crazy prayers, but I never, ever had any kind of relationship. I can say that today I have relationship with something bigger than me. I cannot describe it. I don't know what this is. I know that I doubt still sometimes, and I still have to just do the action every day. I show up, and I have conversations sometimes and just say, you know, God, I don't even know if you're there, but I'm going to act as if I think you are. And I have learned that in these rooms. I don't know how to live my life without the people in AA, and I have other relationships outside of AA. I'm very involved in a church, but you know, it's through daily practice. Spirituality is, it's a practice, it's action. You know, it's not, it just doesn't come naturally, and so we have to do the work. You know, and I have to do that stuff every day. So, you know, we get to the amends, you know, the steps we just revisit over the years. You know, I still have to do inventories and 6 and 7. And I have to do this stuff all the time, like every day. I don't do my steps every day, but you know, inventory, but well, kind of, yeah. In step 10, you really do. I have to look through my daily life, because if I don't catch it, it's going to sit in there and it's going to come out somehow. And it's going to, but usually some crazy behavior or, you know, I just do the stuff every day. When it came to amends, you know, that's such an interesting process, you know, and it's like, great. I did an amends with my ex just to check it off the list, because I thought he was the one that did everything wrong, you know. And a year later, I had kind of an eye-opening experience, and I thought, oh my God, I did like a half-baked amends with him. I really, really need to do something that's more heartfelt. And I did. I had the opportunity to go back and make another amends. He didn't even know it was another amends. He's just like, wow, she's kind of nice. Like, what happened? You know? You know, it's like, you know, we have a decent relationship. It was a horrific divorce. But, you know, he comes to me. He brought his girlfriend to my house for Thanksgiving, this last Thanksgiving, you know, and that blew my kids away. They were like, God, this is so weird. There's dad, there's mom, there's the girlfriend. And, you know, it's, but it's cool. You know, the relationships can be mended, you know, and So I have learned, like when I came in, I didn't know relationship. I learned relationship first with my sponsor. She was the first person I was ever could be real with. And she saw me and she still loved me, honestly. You know, and it's like, wow, that is some powerful stuff when somebody knows all of you. Because I spend so much of my time going, if you only knew me, you know, you wouldn't want me to be around. So then you become the chameleon and be whatever you want somebody to like. And, you know, so I learned how to have relationships not only with the higher power, but with other humans, which is probably the same thing. You know, God's in all of us. And it goes in the book, all, you know, deep down inside, you know, the fundamental idea of God. And it always is talking about in the intuition and in us and all that, you know, and it's just there for our, if we do this stuff, it comes to us, you know. So my life today, you know, it's so funny. I had worked 15 years in this school. So those first 8 years where I was a drunk, and my behavior, I didn't drink at work, but my behavior was drunk behavior. I stirred the pot all the time at that school, you know, and it was absolutely amazing that that people would even speak. Well, a lot of people didn't speak to me. They kind of back off when they see me coming. And, you know, I made amends to my principal for creating so much chaos in his school. And I've told this story several times because it's so indicative of what this program can do. I had a teacher there that I was so mean to her. And I mean, I went at her with daggers. And when it was time to make amends, I will never make amends, never ever make amends. That one column there that you have the, you know, one or two people, like I will hate her until I die. And my sponsor is just like, okay, but just pray for the willingness. And I'm like, okay. And so, you know, it worked. Like into my amends process, all of a sudden you get those intuitive thoughts that says, you know what, I think maybe you can make amends to her. So I email her and say, I'd love to meet for coffee. And she calls the principal and says, is she safe to meet with? Because she wants to, like, have coffee with me. Like, you know, I mean, that's kind of how she remembered me. You know, I was always, oh, God, it was horrible. So then I get sober. And over time, it took people a long time in my building to get used to, like, that there was, they didn't have to be so defensive with me. You know, they were so used to, like, they'd ask me something and I'd be like, meow, you know, and they'd be like, okay, you know, God, just don't mess with her. It was just like, that's drunk behavior without alcohol. You know, like, I'm drinking at night. But I am bringing my drunkenness into the job, and that's something I learned here, man. My personality is not pleasant, and you take the alcohol away, and it's probably even worse. But I started filling it with the steps pretty quickly, you know. And so it ends up that when I left the job at year 15, like, people were sad to see me go. Like, that's a result of this program. That's not anything I did. That is me. Like, I reacted to life differently. I reacted to them differently, and I don't see it. But all of a sudden, I'm like, God, they threw me a party, and some people actually cried and hugged and wanted. You know, they were sad to see me go, and that was, it's pretty amazing, you know. And that is all due to what I have done here in this room, you know. So in these rooms, you know, it's been such a journey. You know, I can't even imagine life without it. It's like AA is just woven into me. I fell in love with the organization pretty quickly. Like, it's so quirky. Like, nobody's in charge, and we support ourselves, and, you know, the traditions. And it's just like, God, this is so cool, because it's like nothing else resembles it that I know. No other organization is like this, you know, and it's like we're this little secret hidden, like for me it was hidden, because I didn't know anybody in AA. You know, we had alcoholics in my family, but I don't think any of them ever found AA. They just died, you know, and that's the deal. That's what, before this thing, that's what people did. There was AA when my uncles were dying, but you know, they never found relief, you know. And it's like, God, it's so sad to watch somebody come in and they're so close, and yet they're not willing to take that last little plunge. And we watch a lot of sadness in here. But, man, what I thought life was going to be so boring and glum, and I wasn't going to have any fun anymore, and it has proved to be just the opposite of that. I mean, there's so much freedom on this side. I wouldn't, you know, I work with sponsees, and sometimes they'll say, oh, if I could have one or two drinks, you know, I would do that. And I go, oh, my God. Like, I don't even know what that thought process even is, because I never had one or two drinks. I mean, that's not even, I drink to get smashed, like just let me blot out like reality. And I would not, if, you know, if somebody said, here's a pill and you can have a couple cocktails and I have to give this up, I wouldn't do it. You know, I mean, this is such a better way. But of course, coming in, you don't know that. I mean, it's like, I don't know that until I'm already like going, wow, I'm standing at a podium and I'm telling my story and like people like me and I have friends, you know, people showed up, you know, and I remember, I'll end with this. I remember, you know, there's a lot of self-pity, you know, and it'd be like, I'd be home and it'd be like, if I died, nobody would come to my funeral. You know, my phone never rings. And it was like that, like, oh, God, it just like wallow in all that stuff. And that would probably not be the case today. You know, I've made some real true friends and relationship in these rooms, you know. So it's been a pleasure being here. I never thought I would want to stand up, especially in NABUC. It's like, it was always very intimidating to think to come and speak here, you know. And I just appreciate that y'all listen to me and let me share my story. I hope you heard something that you could relate to. And thank you.
Barbara, thank you very much. Awesome. Enjoyed it. Let's see. We've asked a friend to come up and do the chips. We got anybody? Find up.
How about Tinsley? He's
okay. Tinsley,
he's out of
chips.
Yeah. My name is Tinsley. I'm an alcoholic. 1979, that's right. I thought we looked pretty good back then, actually. And I was going to break the news to you after the meeting, but there are people in the bushes. So thank God we don't have to be one, thanks to AA. But did I say I'm an alcoholic? I'll say it again, I'm an alcoholic. Here at this meeting, we have a chip system to mark our time away from our last drink. If you'd like to try this way of life, one day at a time, we offer a white chip. Anybody like to pick up a white chip? Free yourself? Okay, we have a silver chip if you've been sober, clean and sober for 30 days. Anybody got 90 days or 3 months for a red chip? How about 6 months for a yellow chip? And how about 9 months for a green chip? Any birthdays, 1 year or multiples?
JD, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, JD.
Do I need to get up here?
Sure.
Well, I came in when Tinsley did, around the same week. This is just one, though. Let me clarify that. My story's a little bit complicated. It's 19 without a drink, but my home group is kind of covers mine altering chemicals. So last year I was caretaking for my son, disabled son, and I got disconnected and my disease came at me through prescriptions. And before you know it, 3 months later, I was near death. I had to have him to function, just like alcohol. Thank God for the relationships I built during that other time. People saved my life. They weren't going to let me drown. I was able to crawl back in, literally. Got a sponsor again, and I said, look, I ain't had a drink in 19. Do I have to pick up a white chip in AA? He said, JD, did you use pills alcoholically? I said, only a couple, but yeah. Y'all know that story, right? But I'm so grateful and blessed. And I share my story to help others, too, that may be going through difficulties like that. Because about 6 months in, a guy from AA came up to me. He said, JD, I got 36 years, but I'm struggling with pills. And so he was able to reach out to me and maybe helped him. I hope I did. But I thank everybody in here in Tinsley. That was really special, and we've been good friends ever since we came in. Thanks. I wanted to thank her for her story. That was powerful. If I got anything out of it, it was willingness and the daily thing. I have to do it daily. Thanks.
Anybody else got a birthday? Anybody want to reconsider on a white chip? Big hand for the chips you hold.
Thank you one and all for joining the Blue Chip Speakers meeting tonight.
Just another homesick child, tired of running wild, ready to stand trial and move on. Though I'm guilty in your sight, ask for mercy tonight. I can't make it through this fight all alone. But oh Lord, don't make it easy. Keep me working till I work it on out. But please, please, won't you shine enough light on me till I'm free from the shadow of doubt. Keep me out of the shadow of doubt. As I try to make some sense of this world I'm up against, well, I know my best defense is your love. When the struggle gets its day and the lessons fall of pain, keep it calling out your name with love. But oh Lord, don't make it easy. Keep me working till I work it on out. But please, please, won't you shine enough light on me till I'm free from the shadow of doubt. Keep me out of the shadow of doubt. From the bottom of my heart, and I'm searching for one star to shine. I will shout from mountain high, and I'll reach into the sky till you open up my eyes so blind. But oh Lord, don't make it easy. Keep me working till I work it on out. But please, please, won't you shine enough light on me till I'm free from the shadow of doubt. Keep me out of the shadow of doubt.